so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game? Yeah!
Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it's time for another Toy Department post-Super Bowl edition. Have you fully recovered from the big game?
Yeah, recovered. I feel great. What a day.
I'm pretty sure I've been on the record with this. To me, any season that ends with the Patriots not winning, I would consider it a successful season.
Reasonably so, successful, yeah. Indeed.
Yeah. You know, there's some bumps in the road, but we got to the end, and Bill Belichick was unhappy, and I feel like that's a place we can all just smile about.
I tweeted this, but the greatest satisfaction I got was knowing that Bill Belichick thought of Jimmy Garoppolo in the final seconds of that Super Bowl. You know he did, because he's that guy that's always thinking about the future, and he's thinking about next year's title, and you know he's pissed he had to trade away a quarterback who, if not next year, if not the year after, 3 years from now, I 100% guarantee Jimmy Garoppolo is better than Tom Brady.
I'm not going to dispute the promise of Jimmy Garoppolo. It's tough to dispute at this point. But
I don't mean he's better than prime Tom Brady. I mean he's better than 43-year-old.
You think he's going to pass him on the curve? But I would say that I think that if you're Belichick and you're thinking about the future, you know Brady's coming back next year.
I know, and
you're probably feeling pretty good about that. And I would also say that
I don't know, man.
There's a distinct possibility that 3 years from now, on that curve, that you were not coaching the team, so you may not really care.
That may be a separate question, but I don't know if he's a guy that's thinking about retirement.
So the mood around here is very much in this reflective of like, well, what did people think? How did we do? So I'll put it to you as a person watching very far away from on television. How do you think we did?
Minnesota?
Yeah, as the hosts.
Great. Everybody loves Minnesota. I mean, it was freezing cold, but everyone talks about how nice everything is and how peaceful and wonderful all the people are. And it seems I like Minnesota. It's a nice place.
Yeah. It was so cold. It was colder than when you were here, I think.
Yeah. No, it seems like everything was really nice, just sort of how you'd expect it. I will say, this is not a knock necessarily, but in a lot of ways, everything felt pretty average from the halftime show. Like, it wasn't explosive or spectacular in any way,
except
for the football.
The Prince Lights thing was pretty spectacular, right? I was all in on that.
I loved it, but you knew something was coming with Prince, right?
Yeah, sure.
And I thought overall the halftime show was very average, and boring, really.
That could be a preview of the Justin Timberlake conversation we're gonna have in a couple minutes, but
Yeah. That'll be interesting. As far as the stuff around the game, it was on vacation and didn't watch as much as I usually would have, but also nothing stood out from the lead up. But the game was great and everything went off with more or less without a hitch, other than NBC, sort of failing to go to commercial break once, which is unbelievable. And yeah, great game. Good time. Everybody enjoys Minnesota. Other than the weather, I don't see any complaints.
I gotta say, I'm kind of with. I mean, look, I enjoyed having it in town. It was very fun for me personally, but I'm kind of with Bomani Jones, who was saying on Twitter today that you shouldn't really host a Super Bowl north of Interstate 20.
Yeah, ever. Agreed.
Which basically means
Minnesota
Florida.
Did great.
Yeah, I think that would be Florida, California. Arizona, New Orleans. I think that's pretty much rotation, personally.
Yeah, I mean, you just and look, you don't have to make a hard and fast rule like that, I suppose. But you know, maybe you squeeze one into DC. But like, there's no reason to do it in a place where it is likely to be sub-freezing and possible to be single digits. That's just, it's silly, and it, and as much, again, no shade to Minnesota. Everybody loves Minneapolis. It obviously affects the week.
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does. When it's -5, yeah, it affects the week. It really does. It's rough. People here embrace it and they believe it's some sort of character building thing, and you know, like, some people really enjoy ice fishing and whatever, I guess, and
you know what,
that's fine.
There was a time in my life where I would have jumped on the character building thing, but I've learned,
yeah, once you go to a place that doesn't really have seasons, you realize how much better, like, seasons are massively overrated. The game itself was pretty spectacular, I thought, unless you're just a really big defense head, because there wasn't really much of that. But I thought it was played at a pretty high level.
You know what, though? It wasn't. It was not one of those games where you're like, my God, the defense is terrible. It was like creative play calling, accurate passing. Nick Foles threw into some windows that were slamming down. I mean, he played unbelievably.
Yeah, and really, to me, hats off to Doug Peterson. Like,
yeah, he outcoached Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I mean, from basically the second half of the Atlanta game, it's pretty much flawless in the play. I mean, you know, the results speak for themselves. Like, they were not getting anything done on offense in that game, and they came out and made some adjustments, went to the RPOs, and rolled. You know,
yeah.
from there rolled. Forth. So
yes. Doug Peterson out-schemed Bill Belichick live,
yep,
which is just not something we maybe have ever seen.
And it's, you know, I mean, I do think, and Lord knows we got mentioned enough, people learn from the Falcons, you know? Everybody,
yeah,
but the Jags apparently learn from the Falcons. And that's, you keep your foot on the gas, you know? You keep your foot,
yeah,
on the gas. Now, smartly, and, you know, the Falcons, I mean, it wasn't really the Falcons took their foot off the gas. That was part of the problem, is that, you know,
they blew it.
They had,
yeah,
this, they had this mentality of, like, keep attacking. But that, for them, translated to, we're not going to take all the time we need to off of the play clock for some reason.
Right. That's the wrong expression of attacking.
And we're going to throw it a lot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do think the Eagles had the right mentality. And I'm not just saying that from a results standpoint, because obviously it paid off for them. I think their process.
If you listened to podcasts or read articles leading up to the game, this is the prescription, you know? And more to the point, when they were getting stymied early on, the adjustments in just sort of play calling style, not really in overall scheme. Because, again, RPOs was going to be the thing, but it's subtle changes. And frankly, the Patriots' defense was never great, so Philly knew if they could score and their defense could make the occasional stop, boom, and that's what happened.
Yeah. Do you buy the idea of the Eagles as a potential dynasty going forward? You know, they're pretty much, the whole team's locked up for a little while at least, and 21 starters are signed for next year.
Why not? I mean, if you get Peters back, and Wentz, the offense should be even better. The defense is half young. You know, how well Fletcher Cox holds up will be a major factor in just how dominant they can be. But it's not like, you know, I will say this. The Rams, potentially the Falcons, probably the 49ers in a couple of years. Like, teams are coming in the NFC.
Yeah, Saints ain't going anywhere.
Saints are around as long as Drew Brees is up. So it's not an easy path in the NFC. The Vikings, if they figure out their quarterback situation, should be formidable.
That's
again.
That's a fairly large if at the moment.
What's that?
It's a fairly large if at the moment.
Fair enough, but it's not like Case Keenum coming into this year was adding Peyton Manning to the team, and they were in NFC Championship.
Defense will be good, and Dalvin Cook comes back.
Dalvin Cook coming back, and you know they have options at quarterback in any case. So there are teams, but this Eagles team, when you consider they did this without one of the best left tackles in the league and one of the best quarterbacks in the league, it's scary.
Yeah. I think this was a bit of a weird year. You know what I mean? So I look at the Eagles as, definitely they're going to be contenders next year, but I think they're kind of just in the mix of contenders to me. And I know they were the best team all season and then won the Super Bowl.
But, yes.
It's just not that easy to run it back. Speaking to you from experience.
And again, like, things change just, you know, 21 starters, fine, but things change year to year. Fletcher Cox will turn 28 during the season next year, and while that is young by any normal standards for a man of his size who is doing the heavy lifting that he is required to do, who knows? You know, I mean, he might be equally dominant. He might be a skosh less dominant, and maybe that has a dramatic effect on the rest of the defense. It's just the NFL, things change so fast.
Do you think anyone brings up the Super Bowl loser's curse at the start of next season?
Like that the Patriots will fall apart?
Right, that people start, you know what happens to Super Bowl losers? Blah, 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 blah. Right. That talk goes out the window, right? Everyone just assumes the Patriots are immune.
It's going to be more about how they're on a mission now because Tom Brady's 41 and Bill Belichick might retire soon and blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. That's definitely my forecast for next year is plenty of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, honestly, this is the best result for Robert Kraft.
Yeah, it probably is. Keeps this thing together a little longer.
Yep.
All right, so you mentioned Justin Timberlake at halftime. We not only saw that. He was here for Jimmy Fallon. I don't know if you watched any of that as well.
I was in Hawaii, man.
I went to the album release party for Man in the Woods. That was part of. I don't know if I teased that last week.
I don't think you did. That sounds awesome. Was that Friday night?
That was Thursday night at Paisley Park.
Whoa.
Yeah. So they played the album.
Wait. Hold on. Stop. Had you been to Paisley Park?
I have been to Paisley Park, yeah. I was there when Prince was alive, and then I've been there since he's passed as well.
Did you see Prince at Paisley Park?
Sad.
Are you not allowed to talk about it?
No, I'm totally allowed to talk about it. I went to one of his parties. Paisley Park is in Chanhassen, which is about 40 minutes outside of town. So you're deep burbs.
Right.
You know, Prince was a Jehovah's Witness, so there was no booze at Paisley Park events. There was booze at this release party. There was an open bar, which was delightful. But at that, there was no booze. It was 12:30, and I heard he was not going on until 2. And I didn't know if we'd be able to get an Uber back. And we were like, you know what? Like, we live here. There'll be another time. There was not another time.
That's a bummer. Okay. Well, I'm sorry I brought that up.
So
in any event,
I did go and did not see Prince. But the Revolution played at this. Did I mention that earlier? So that was
Awesome, though.
It was not, however, the best place. Like, I did not consider my homework finished, even though I had heard the album, because there was just a lot going on. And a ridiculous amount of famous people in the room. So there was a lot of sort of, gawking. A lot of like really, you know, interesting random football celebrity type people. You know what I
now,
mean?
When you're at an event like that, do you go talk to any of those celebrities?
I'm a little bit more from the LA school of like, you know, unless something happens.
Yeah, but I mean, you're like in the mix, like you have every right to be there. You could just be like, hey man, what do you think of the album? You know?
Like there's a point. I mean, they had this like free T-shirt thing, and I'm in the line, and next to me is Matthew Berry, you know, of ESPN.
Yeah, sure. I met him,
and I was just about to start in on, "Hey, man, I really like your podcast," and I realized just how nerdy that sounded, and I just decided not to. I did say hello to Issa Rae, because had to. And she looked amazing, like it kind of different in person than I expected, but like amazing. Russell Wilson and Ciara were there. I saw Emmitt Smith and Terrell Owens. Terrell Owens is hard to miss in the room.
I bet.
John Lynch, 49er general manager, was hanging out for some reason. Yeah, it was a very interesting party.
John Lynch can party.
So Justin was there. He hung out. He didn't sing or anything, but he played the record, and we saw some videos and stuff, and it was interesting. And I think the record is interesting, too.
Yeah.
It's certainly, I feel like, interesting to discuss.
Yeah, so let me say this. I was bored to damn near to death by that halftime show, and if Twitter's any indication, I was in the majority. It seemed like the NFL programmed the whole thing, you know? just come out and sing your damn songs and dance around the field a little bit, all right?
There was a point
around the field, dancing, man.
Where he was, like, dancing on the logo, you know? You know what I'm talking about? And I actually leaned over to somebody. I'm like, Roger Goodell's a hard-on right now.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, and then he's like, now dance over here and get the hell out of here. We're playing football, right? And that's fine, man. Honestly, I don't need the halftime show to be Prince every year, and that's the only one that even stands out in my memory other than like Michael Jackson, We Are the World, when I was a child. So whatever. But
U2 didn't say that to you?
What's that?
The U2 halftime didn't say that to you?
You know I don't care about U2.
I know, but that was a pretty epic halftime.
Whatever, fine. I'm sure it was great. Lady Gaga was pretty cool too, or whatever. I just, you know, the Left Shark was fine. It's just if you're asking me, like, do any of those? Okay, you know how they say it's the biggest moment in music at the beginning of the halftime show? Like,
I actually missed that. Do they really say that?
Yeah, they say that's stuff dumb. Like that, like they're the Grammys or something. Which also, by the way, not the biggest moment in music.
Yeah, that's dumb.
But
what about Beyonce? You don't remember Beyonce's performance at all?
You're right. Beyonce is a pretty good one.
I thought Bruno Mars was really good when he did it. I don't know.
Who?
I thought Bruno Mars was really good when he did it.
Again.
Yeah.
There are plenty of good ones. But if you're asking, but if like, I'm thinking about ones where biggest moment in music made any sense at all, it's Prince and MJ. And that's all that really jumps out. Now that you mentioned Beyonce, that's a pretty good one. But anyway, the point is the halftime show was blah. That's fine with me, but it did affect me in terms of like, I got less excited about listening to the album because I had heard Filthy and nothing else that he played from the new album jumped out to me in any way in the performance. And I hadn't yet listened to the album because I had been on vacation. And so, in fact, the halftime show was kind of a reminder like, oh man, I got to listen to this album. And oh man, I'm no longer excited about it because this was so blah. And so, okay. So I put the album on and Filthy is the first track, which again, doesn't mean anything really, but was surprising to me. Cause I just feel like that, I don't know why it felt like an end of album track or something. And the single just like right off the top felt strange to me.
I mean, it's a whole album of feels like the end of the album tracks, kind of.
In a way, but I'll say this.
Except for the Supplies song, which the name of which I'm blanking on right now.
Supplies is the name of that song.
Is it?
So, here's some things, okay? So let me get into this, right? Because I put it on, and it's Filthy. And, okay, I know this song. And you know what? I kind of dig it for what it is, which is just like a dance single. And then Midnight Summer Jam is like a weird southern folk guitar ditty slash like bouncy dance jam. And I'm just the whole time, I'm like, I don't. Again, I came in less excited than I probably ordinarily would have. And I was like, not. I didn't get like suddenly like, oh man, this is amazing. But I kept being like, this, whatever this is, it's a little, I don't know what I'm listening to exactly, but I'm kind of into it. And then Sauce is like this filthy, but brightly sung sex song. And as you go into it, almost everything is built around these little, sort of really bright toned guitar noodles is the best way I can describe it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't hit like you expect a Justin Timberlake album to hit. Really Filthy is the at the beginning is like bonf, bonf, and you're like, okay, this is the Justin Timberlake I know. It's a little muddled, but I see what he's doing. And then it's all these weird bouncy dance things. And then, as you point out, you get to track 7 and Supplies is a trap song. And again, I don't totally know what I'm listening to, but he's kind of slaying it. Am I wrong? Like,
yeah.
Kind of slays a trap song. And then the duet with Alicia Keys on Morning Light is beautiful. I tried to hate the Chris Stapleton duet and I couldn't. Like, the one song that rubbed me the wrong way is Flannel. I just don't like it.
I don't mind Flannel. I don't mind. I get it.
This is so rare for me, but I think the lyrics just bother me too much. That's so rare. Usually I couldn't care less, but for whatever reason, him singing about his old flannel, his trusty old flannel, makes me want to kick someone in the nuts. But really, every other song on here is, at worst, it has me kind of like bouncing in my seat or as I walk being like, what is this? I kind of dig it. And the best ones have me being like, I don't know what's going on, but this is kind of amazing.
Yeah, I think I don't know what is going on. I feel like is a fair summation of this experience. And I don't, that makes it sound worse, I think, than right, I really felt like it was.
Yeah, it never was bad. It really, again, Flannel rubbed me the wrong way a little bit. Like, there's, I was never like, eh.
Yeah, it's always interesting.
Yeah.
I appreciate how much, like, live playing appears to be on this record. Yep. And in fact, I did, you know, I didn't look up the production on it. I didn't really, like, most of this is a Neptunes record, and the songs that aren't are Timbaland, from what I can tell. And I would have not guessed either of those people were involved in 1,000 Years. I think it's really, which I think is really interesting, because it feels really organic. It also feels like a deeply personal record that I walked away from not feeling like I knew Justin Timberlake any better than when I started. So
yeah.
I don't really, like, I don't know that it's totally successful. It's kind of unabashedly hokey at times, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing. I almost find a little bit refreshing.
Because it does, it seems sincerely hokey, not a put on. I think he's hokey. Like, keep in mind, this is Mickey Mouse Club and NSYNC. Like, that's who this guy is. Cool as he may have become, that's who he is.
Yeah, I also think he's, you know, he's a 37-year-old dad now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I think he's trying to figure out.
Yeah, the song to his kid is cute.
Yeah, like, where's his place in pop music? You know what I mean? Uh-huh. A little bit.
No, but you're right. I mean, Pharrell and Chad Hugo have writing credits on, you know, 10 of the 16 tracks or something. And most of the rest is Timbaland.
Yeah,
it's
so weird.
It's, I don't know, man, but I have to say, as time goes on, I feel like this one's going to be a grower. Because even in like 3 listens, because I've listened to this pretty much repeatedly since I started, because I'm just trying to like figure out exactly what's happening. And each time, like, I'm not sure I'm figuring out what's happening, but I am more and more delighted.
I agree. It does age well. It's a little long.
It's too long. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm gonna make a playlist out of this, but I'll tell you this. Like, I have on my iPhone a long playlist that's just like every song that ever gets me like fired up or like is a jam in any way, just all on one giant playlist that I like to shuffle when I'm feeling frisky. And I can see, as time goes on, like more and more tracks off of this getting added to that, because they're all just, it's all pretty bright and happy and enjoyable.
I want to know what the name of this playlist is. What do you call this playlist?
It has changed names on multiple occasions. I think right now it's just called All the Jams.
Has it ever been Boner Jams 08?
No. What is that? What movie is that?
That's from 40-Year-Old Virgin, when the guy had like the porn mixtape, and he called it Boner James. Oh, wait.
Okay.
Good times. All right. You know what's not good times? Watching Mudbound. That was not good times. It was.
No.
I'm going to steal your phrase. This is bad time entertainment for me. And it's not to say that it was not good or engrossing. It was all of those things. I typically am a person that enjoys things that make me feel bad. Like, I'm not against bad time entertainment, but this is a particular bad way that I'm tired of feeling like this, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
let me say why I sort of supported you watching this, pushed you towards watching this, perhaps. While, yes, it is bad time entertainment most of the time that it's on, I felt like most of the time it is within the realm of the bad time entertainment that isn't as bothersome to you, other than, you know, maybe 20 minutes of it, which is particularly violent and racist. And I also thought, like, as this sort of movie goes, this was a really good one with really, really excellent performances. Particularly, I think his name's Jason Mitchell, the guy who's on The Chi and who played Eazy-E in Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah, he was great.
And just to watch him as this, you know, young Chicago chef, and then as Eazy-E, and then as this character in Mudbound, it's really tremendous, I think.
Yeah. Jonathan Banks, I thought, was really great as you know, Pappy, racist Pappy.
No doubt. And I was impressed by Mary J. Blige. Like, she is not an actress, and I thought her performance was excellent.
I thought she was very good. Obviously, you come into this where she's getting all the awards buzz, and I sort of expected her to kind of like steal the movie.
Yeah, well,
she doesn't
wasn't
do
that sort of part.
You know what I mean? But
I don't know that she had the opportunity.
And again, that's not her fault. Like, that has nothing to do with her. You know what I mean? She took the role that she was given and played it extremely well. I think the bar had been raised for me coming in.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I hear that, but for me, as someone who knew her, you know, as Queen Mary, I was just really impressed.
I mean,
she has acted
before. It's not like this is not the first time she's been on screen.
Yeah, but this is her first major film role, isn't it?
What else
has she done?
I kind of don't think it is, but we will keep talking and I'll let you know.
No, I'm pulling it up right now. Okay. I mean, listen, whatever it is, I certainly have never seen her in a performance that stood out like this. She a couple episodes of Empire, Hidden Figures, she had a tiny thing, Grey's Anatomy episode, like,
she was in Rock of Ages. She starred in a Lifetime movie with Angela Bassett and Malik Yoba.
Okay, so I think my point stands.
But those are actual roles, like, you're acting, you know what I mean? Like,
I
you're in a movie, you're starring in a movie.
I'm not saying it's the first time she's pretended to be someone else on screen.
Okay.
I am saying, for someone who is not, in all likelihood, a particularly trained actress, who was given a part that I think, sort of to your point, is not a movie stealer, but requires a subtle performance with emotional depth.
I got to say, I really think you're discounting her time pitching Perfume, her own Perfume, My Life, on the Home Shopping Network.
I should give her credit for her acting performance on the Precious soundtrack as well, probably.
Sorry. Now I'm deep in Mary J. Blige's Wikipedia page.
I can see that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Anyway, I just thought, you know, this is in that Requiem for a Dream category of good movies you would never, ever, ever want to see again.
Yeah.
But I do think it was noteworthily good, if that makes sense.
I if you enjoy this sort of thing, it's a strong recommendation. I have nothing to say about the quality of the film. It was good.
It is tough.
It did what it set out to do. Yeah. I just, you know. But I would also say at the same time, it's not 12 Years a Slave. You know, like it's not necessarily the best of that form, but it's very well done.
Yeah. Fair enough.
And yeah. It just made me sad. It made me sad, and I knew it was going to make me sad, and I avoided watching it, I think probably subconsciously for that. I put it off till I basically waited till the last possible minute to watch it this week, and it delivered on exactly what I thought it would be.
Well, if you had been smart, you would have saved the other one to watch after it.
Yes, if I had been smart. But I literally thought about that as I was going, well, what should I watch now? But I was like, you know, I just don't feel like getting in the mud right now. So yeah. I'm going to watch National Lampoon's, I guess it's not called National Lampoon's, whatever. It's called...
A Futile and Stupid Gesture.
Thank you. Not the best title, I didn't think. but this was a fun world to hang out in. You know what I mean? Like,
That's one thing I would say about it for sure.
I wouldn't say it's a great movie. Mm-hmm. I feel like the life of Doug Kenner is not necessarily even
Doug Kenny,
fully examined in this film.
No, I would agree.
But at the same time, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was the presentation of it was extremely interesting. And there are a number of people who drop in for a minute and are hilarious. And a lot of funny things happen, and easy watch.
It's a very easy watch, despite being an hour 41. It flew by. The acting, and not just the acting, but for the many characters who you know their real life face and persona, seeing the portrayal is truly delightful. There is really not a one that disappointed, I would say. And you'll recognize almost all of the cast members filling the roles of the famous people that you remember.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say, there's a bit of an unreliable narrator problem in this movie, in that it's clearly being, you know, told from this singular perspective, and this guy seemed to be a bit of an exaggerator, a joker, a self-promoter, all of these sort of things.
Well, he is the exact comic sensibility of the National Lampoon.
Yeah.
And that is what I think was executed so successfully here, is while I agree it's not the greatest movie ever, it captures the essence and the spirit of the sort of comic identity of the irreverent, never serious, unafraid to mock everything sort of persona. I mean, this guy, what you learn if you know anything about National Lampoon is that this guy's persona was the persona of National Lampoon, for better and sometimes worse.
Yeah. And look, the other part of that thought that I was going to say was that despite that, I didn't realize exactly how at the center of culture this guy was, and how many zeitgeist-shaking things, you know, he was a very real part of. You know, I think he also sort of kind of tried to take credit for Saturday Night Live, but, you know, when you think about Animal House and Caddyshack and you know, so many of these other things, it's like, wow, you know, like this is so much of modern comedy came directly out of this sensibility.
And there's even a scene where he goes and sees Airplane and he's pissed off because he's saying this is the thing everyone's going to care about.
Right.
Even Airplane is his humor. Like, somebody else did it, but stylistically you can see the imprint so clearly with the sort of deadpan absurdity. I mean, I think if, in fact, I may have just hit on what I would the two words I would use to describe the sensibility of the National Lampoon.
Yeah, and look, and I think it's interesting because, you know, as a man, it's like those traits are sort of combined with the almost like the Daniel Day-Lewis in Phantom Thread obsession of like,
and the level of commitment.
Yeah, of like craft and commitment to doing this thing and to continue to create and push and make things better. To the point that it broke him for a while, and then broke the other people in his life.
Yeah. One of the funny things about this movie is every time, literally every time anyone actually tries to get anything serious accomplished in any way, they have to say to the person next to them, no, this is not a bit.
Right.
Because everything's a bit. And that is the comic sensibility of Airplane, yeah. Is that ridiculous deadpan silliness that every single thing is a bit. And, you know, that defines, I mean, if you think about even out there dudes like Eric Andre, like this comic sensibility of making everything a bit to a level of absurdity that is difficult for some people to comprehend, it's a huge part of the comedy world now. Huge.
Yeah. Here's something else, though, that I think is interesting, because I do think, to me, this movie is filled with acknowledgement of the misery that being this way caused other people, but almost not really a reckoning of it. You know, like
it's not very apologetic. Yeah, no,
it's very aware. You know, of I was a bad person and I did some things that are bad and hurt other people, but not really like it's not really coming to terms with that. And I feel like. Well, you know, modern comedy, so much of modern comedy is now built with this understanding that comedians are pretty dark people and authentic pain can be expressed in a really interesting way. And I feel like this sensibility is lacking that somewhat.
Well, but I do think we're still fighting that battle because this is, in fact, maybe a new expression of that battle where I think we've always known that whether it be comedians or any hard working sort of nut can hurt the people in their lives and damage themselves and their loved ones. Now we're reckoning with, okay, yeah, you can acknowledge that dark stuff on stage, but where's the line where you stop your behavior, you know, because now we have Louis C.K.
Right.
And it's great. Well, it's fine if you acknowledge that stuff, but in order for us to laugh, we have to believe that you're like, basically decent.
Right. Well, and look, we've talked about this at length, but I think part of the reason why that whole thing hit us so hard was because we at least operated under the belief that he had been so honest with us about his life and issues and problems.
Because there was a tacit trust.
Right.
And you know, I mean, I that's a separate issue really, but I do think there's some of that present here and relatively unexamined. That being said, and let's spoiler alert really quickly, because I do want to get into sort of the key device of the film. So if you haven't watched it and want to, I would skip ahead a couple minutes. But, I mean, you know who Martin Mull is, right?
Of course.
So we start this movie with Martin Mull saying, I am Doug Kenny. I am grown up Doug Kenny. And obviously we both know he's not. So
I didn't know that, by the way. I didn't really know much about Doug Kenny coming into the movie. So, I mean, by the end I learned, but I didn't know that it was happening. Yeah.
So you thought you didn't remember his name was Martin Mull and you were like, maybe that is Doug Kenny.
No, I mean, I knew it was Martin Mull. I just thought he was playing grown up Doug Kenny. Yeah.
Right. So what I'm saying is we didn't know what had happened to Doug Kenny necessarily, but we did know that wasn't actually Doug Kenny.
Yeah, I didn't think it was the real Doug Kenny. I thought it was.
That's my point. Yeah, we both knew it wasn't the real Doug Kenny. So there is some mystery in that respect from the very beginning. I would say by halfway through, it had occurred to me, and in fact, I was pretty confident that he probably was not around anymore. And when you find out that he died under somewhat unclear circumstances, but quite possibly committed suicide, quite possibly fell off a cliff in a drug-induced haze. I don't know. I guess I was not especially surprised at that point. In fact, I kind of felt it coming when he was holed up in that hotel room in Hawaii.
Yeah, I felt like the movie really pointed to suicide.
Yeah, I think it did too. So I guess one thing I'm saying with this is that a lot of the stuff you're talking about in terms of more seriously examining this stuff, I don't think was ever particularly of interest to the filmmakers, who I think the goal here was probably more to draw the line that we've been talking about in terms of this is a guy who was hugely influential on the shape of the modern comedy world.
Yeah.
And I think they did that. Now, would it be a more complete and perhaps like grander film if it tried to do more? Probably, potentially. But I do think that this is a basically successful movie, right?
Yeah, I would say it's a successful movie for sure. Can I bring up one thing that was weird just for me?
Yeah, please.
One of the women Doug goes to college with and is in the opening scene and then reappears later in the movie is a woman that I went to college with, and we were really good friends freshman year. So seeing her and knowing that she's my age, playing a college student, was really weird.
The one from Bones?
I don't believe that she's appeared in Bones. Her name's Carla Gallo. She was not the one he winds up marrying. She's the other one. And then he goes to visit her later on as an adult.
Yeah, she was definitely on Bones. Yeah, I know her.
Yeah.
She had a long run on Bones.
I didn't watch Bones. I feel bad because last time I saw her, I would have brought it up.
She was also in Funny People. She's in a lot of good stuff.
She's in the Judd Apatow sort of universe. She was on Undeclared.
She's on the roster, yeah.
And then and she's had a part in most of his movies. She was the girl who had her period on the dance floor in Superbad.
That's right.
Among many other things. So
I'll say this. I enjoy her acting, and she was funny in this in her brief scenes.
Yeah, but seeing her, playing a college freshman again.
That's one of the funny things about this too. They joke about that with Will Forte. You know, like it's a funny movie that I think did what it set out to do.
Yeah. Oh, and I don't even think we mentioned. I really thought Will Forte was pretty excellent.
Agreed. I thought Will Forte was excellent. I thought Domhnall Gleeson was excellent. I thought, again, all these excellent actors in excellent small roles. Yeah. Tomlin and
give it up for Domhnall Gleeson. It was unrecognizable. I thought I didn't realize until the credits that it was Domhnall Gleeson.
Oh, that's funny. At first I was like, he looks like there's an actor. What's his name? He's the guy who's playing the Flash in the new.
Yeah, I don't know there.
I haven't actually seen any of those movies, but his name is the Flash movie.
That would be really, if his name was the Flash, that would be a really good casting coincidence.
Ezra Miller. Look at a photo of Ezra Miller like 2 years ago. And he looks almost exactly like Domhnall Gleeson with that curly black wig.
All right. I'll have to check that out.
But then I was like, no, wait, he's too old. He's like, doesn't quite look right. And yeah, I figured out about halfway through it was Domhnall Gleeson, and he's excellent in that role, I thought, Matt Bevers from Broad City plays Belushi, and it's just like all these delightful. By the way,
a lot of the old state people pop up for a minute. Joel McHale is great, yeah.
But Joel McHale playing Chevy Chase, like, is that a shot at Chevy Chase? Because don't they hate each other from Community? Wasn't there a feud?
I never even thought about that. I feel like everything is kind of a shot at Chevy Chase these days.
Yeah, so I was curious about that, but I did think McHale. Sincerely was excellent as Chevy Chase.
Me too.
Like, I don't think if it was a shot, Joel McHale still played it excellently.
Yeah. I bet that Chevy Chase and Doug Kenny partying in Hawaii would have been absolute terrors.
in
the late 1970s.
I
don't know. I guess we were talking about superhero things, and I don't know why I thought of this. I apologize for the tangent, but if you have not yet seen the video of Tom Hardy in a with some sort of mask on his face, talking to his dog, like in the Bane voice, like doing Bane lines. That this video that's been going around Twitter. I highly recommend it. Highly recommend Tom Hardy doing Bane to his puppy.
Should I watch it live right now? And enjoy it? That looks like an athletic cup that
yeah.
he has.
Yeah, I think
face.
He might be wearing a cup. You should finish the pot and then watch it.
Okay. All right. Well, it's up on my screen. I'm ready to go.
Okay. All right. We should get to the good place real quick. I know. It seems like the good place might be Tom Hardy doing Bane things into a cup. But the good place is also just a really excellent season of television. I know we've lavished praise on this show before, but what Mike Schur is doing on network television is to me just unparalleled.
For me to be watching the last season of Parks and Rec on Netflix while simultaneously going through this season of The Good Place just makes it so clear how brilliant Mike Schur is. Like, the casting and conceptions of these two shows is so brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, those are, you know, the writing's great. The acting, of course, is wonderful. But the things that stand out are how tremendous the collections of on-screen talent are, how well they work together.
Especially true in The Good Place, right? Because you have these two heavyweights with Ted Danson and Kristen Bell, but just about everyone else is an unknown, you know?
And almost all of them are, I think, Groundlings people. They're all improv folks from the L.A. scene.
Except for the guy who plays Chidi, I think was a New York stage guy.
Yeah, coming in but like Janet and... you know, Jason and Tahani, like they it's so good. And almost every pair of characters that get set up together have amazing chemistry and are hilarious. And Maya Rudolph in these last two episodes, that might have been my favorite Maya Rudolph performance ever. She is so funny and so good as this almighty judge with the sort of irreverent tone that this whole show has taken towards the afterlife. She just hits it out of the park.
My second favorite Maya Rudolph performance this year, which is saying something, because I don't disagree with you, but I liked Big Mouth.
Yeah.
Well,
she's great in Big Mouth. I here's the other thing. For a show in 22 minutes a week for what, 13 episodes?
It's less. It's less than that, actually. I think they only did 8 to 10 this year, right?
I think it's more like 13. But anyway, whatever it is, for a 22-minute comedy in that amount of time to both feel like I'm laughing constantly and also like they have got me engaged in a narrative that I'm interested in and characters I care about, it's unbelievable. And really, the only thing it makes me think of is Parks and Rec.
Yeah. 13 episodes, by the way. Sorry.
Yeah. So I was right the first time. Yeah. So, like, literally, all of my favorite 30-minute shows are one-off week to week for the most part. There's some exceptions. Like, Netflix has done some things, I guess. But, like, you know, the Seinfelds certainly everything in that era, Seinfeld, Friends, those 30-minute shows, week to week, the narrative is at best marginally interesting. Always Sunny. I guess You're the Worst is sort of in that category, but it's really more a narrative than a 22-minute comedy. To be the traditional sitcom form and engage me in character and narrative, I just think is so awesome.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is – you can tell that – and look, we've sort of been putting it on Michael Schur, and, you know, he's the guy at the head of all this. But really, there's a whole team here, and it's a lot of the same people from Parks and Rec.
Joe Mandy,
Megan Anram, Jen Statsky, all people who are – Alan Yang, who's, you know, one of the key guys on
Master of None.
Thank you. And also one of the original Fire Joe Morgan guys.
Yeah.
They're all involved in all this. You know what I mean? So it's why you have some of these things. And I think all of these people, they're in love with classic television comedies, and there are all of these sort of nods to that. And I think not only that, they understood what made those comedies great and how to build these kind of relationships over time, really dating back to The Office, if you think about it.
I was never into The Office, but what they've done with Parks and Rec and The Good Place to me is just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's really spectacular. There are two other things I wanted to mention. So much of this show is now sort of dependent on the Chidi Eleanor romance or bond really working. And I think it's sort of easy to overlook how hard it is to pull that off. Like those two people had to seem like they were mismatched as soulmates.
And then
you have to buy them coming together really for this whole thing to work going forward, and they absolutely knock it out of the park. And
yeah, it's the acting, it's the writing, and it's so good, man. Yeah. It's so
and
good.
And the long Bell. Game these guys are playing, I think, too, really.
Yeah.
You know, from season to season, and understanding, writing themselves into these sort of situations and understanding how to write themselves out to set up the next season. It's a feat.
They drop us in a place at the end of this season, and there's no need to spoil it at all, but they drop us in a place that is just as intriguing to me going into next season as last season's twist ending was heading into this one.
Yeah. I mean, it's not quite the same,
it's not a
mind-blowing twist. Yeah. But
right.
It does, it's set up to be an interesting and a different show next year.
Exactly. It's set up to be a third show in its third year and one that I am very interested in watching.
Yep. This one's easy. Sometimes we just have to agree on stuff, right? And I think we're in lockstep on this one. All right, let's jump into homework. You may recall that we bet on the Super Bowl last week.
Oh, yeah, playa.
As I said to you in a text, I've never been happier to lose a bet.
Well, I'll see if I can't fix that.
I may regret saying that later on, now that I actually have to do this. But, the Pats lost. I think I would have been truly miserable had the Pats won and not covered.
Yeah.
Which is very well set up there for a little while in that fourth quarter. So.
No, this way everyone is at least a little happy. This is the best outcome.
Yeah. So, if I got to watch and listen to some crap, I'll take
it. If the Pats had won and covered, you would have gotten some joy out of assigning me bad television and music I don't like.
Yeah, I would have enjoyed this, but I would have been miserable in the hours leading up to it. Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. Exactly. None of these birds can beat the Patriots. You would have been saying. All right. So for those of you who are confused about what's going on right now, the bet was whoever wins, and it was the spread, which means when the Eagles won, I more than covered.
4.5 was the spread, if you don't recall. Yeah.
Gets to program an entire episode, much to the chagrin of the other host. So obviously people who have discerned a pattern to our taste will know that I have historically made a habit of virtually dragging Derek to sci-fi, superheroes, R&B, and out there psych rock type things.
Yep. And here they come.
that is sort of the murderer's row. So I am going to do my best to hit them all. Let's start with the silver screen. Wait, which one is the silver screen?
That's movies. Movie? That's movies.
Okay. Let's start with the silver screen where I feel like I'm giving you a bit of a break because I happen to know you would have seen Black Panther anyway, and I happen to think you're going to enjoy it, but it is nevertheless a superhero film, and you are going to have to spend your hard-earned dollar to go see it in a theater.
Yeah, I have decided, okay, I was going to be ready to sort of put my superhero thing down just to check this out because I think there's some other interesting things at play. But make no mistake, I'm still superhero fatigued, and I'm not like super duper looking forward to this.
No, I know you're not, and I know that you wouldn't necessarily have gone to see it this week in the theater.
Certainly not this week. When
the theater's likely to be very crowded, you're going to have like 2 days to see it before our episode. So I know this will be moderate torture, and I take great solace in that. Small screen. I want to go with a new Netflix series called Altered Carbon, which, if you're not already upset enough just from the name, is a dystopian future sci-fi show that takes place in San Francisco, where everyone basically saves their brain to a hard drive and can like switch bodies and stuff. You're gonna love it.
All right, so here's what I'll say, and I probably should just take my medicine and shut up, but. I do like to watch things in San Francisco.
Good luck.
So there's that.
Watch 3 episodes of this, and I delight in the idea of you having to do the same.
And I'm really glad that you didn't give me Dark, in which case I would have had to watch science fiction in German.
Yeah, that's too scary for me. And look, I'll just come out and say it. I'll admit I'm going to cop to this right here on the podcast. Subtitles are a little much for me.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
I end up staring at the bottom of the screen too much. I feel like I miss half the movie.
I actually have subtitles on all the time.
Yeah, see, some people do that. And even that, like, I find myself staring when I can understand what they're saying. I'm staring at the words, and I feel like I miss something.
I have a really loud, like, the heating cooling unit in my, you know, I live in, like, a loft. Yeah. It's really loud. And so, you know, it's not always on, but sometimes it comes on and starts rumbling and you'd miss stuff. So I, you know, turned it on for that when my TV wasn't super loud. I since have kind of upgraded my audio. I don't fully need it, but I'm used to them there and I kind of like it. It's like backup when you don't get something.
I don't dig it. Yeah. I don't dig it. Plus sometimes you see what they're saying before they say it. I don't know. It makes me feel weird. Anyway, Altered Carbon, dig it. Let's go to the music world where I wish there was a silly sport I could make you watch, but that's probably.
I'm sure there is. I mean, obviously, you know the one sport I don't want to watch, but then you have to watch it too.
I like golf, but I don't think there's anything this week that's worth wasting our time on. Anyway, let's start in the R&B world. Are you aware of a band called Hiatus Coyote?
I have heard that name, but I know nothing about them.
Okay. Well,
I'm about to.
A little. You're about to a little. They're an Australian or perhaps New Zealandish sort of R&B band. They're pretty out there and weird and pretty awesome. And their lead singer goes by the name Napalm, N-A-I-P-A-L-M, separate words, and released a solo album in October that I have been digging lately. And it's a lot of, like, she's really a pretty awesome guitarist, and it's a lot of, like, solo electric guitar and R&B crooning type of deals.
All right, I want to give props to you. For describing that in such a way as to make me truly dread putting it on. So well
done. All right.
Hit like all my hatred erogenous zones.
I know. I think this is going to do it as well. And I think you'll know just by giving you the name, a band whose name I'm not sure I'm pronouncing correctly, but I believe it's
Disco Biscuits.
No, come on. Don't disrespect me. I'm going to go with the pronunciation Kruangbin.
Oh, man.
It is spelled Kruangbin.
All right, let's be honest. You just made that up right now.
I certainly did not.
You have some sort of Madden torture generator, and you just put in...
Honestly,
give me the name of a super weird R&B act, and you got Kruangbin out of there.
They're not exactly R&B. They're on my mind because they're great, like, beach music for me. So I've been listening to them because I was in Hawaii, and they released an album a week ago called Con Todo El Mundo. But the album I know better. And
you sure it's not called Eat It, Derek?
I'll give you the option. They are both on Spotify. But Con Todo El Mundo is new. The Universe Smiles Upon You is their 2015 album. both of them are relatively similar. I will read you the beginning of the Pitchfork review. In fact, here's the subtitle. On their second album, the Houston-based instrumental trio crafts a unique psychedelic vibe that hangs between continents and eras. Here's the first sentence. Kruangbin craft atmosphere music that never fades into the background, like some endless curl of smoke that keeps pluming upward. I think you're going to really enjoy this.
Oh, man. All right, so which one of those two albums is shorter?
I think the new one is short.
All right, well, that's the one I'm picking. Okay.
Leo. By the way, Pitchfork gave it a 7.6, so get excited.
Oh, man. That's not helping.
All right. And the last album I actually think there's a pretty good chance you'll find intriguing. We were going to listen to it for this week. The reason I'm making you do it is because I know you'll hate the way you have to listen to it, which is by going to YouTube. It is the new album by Ty Siegel, a San Francisco garage rock guitar whiz.
I mean, look, people remember that this was homework for last week. We can just we can just explain that. I was unable to listen to this on Spotify, and I had a little rage freak out prior to the podcast. So now I have to go to YouTube to listen to it.
Yeah.
Like a damn 12-year-old.
We understand and can identify with Derek's anger over things not appearing on Spotify.
I'm
going
to sit at my iPad and put it into YouTube, and then I'm going to have to like thumb in to like make sure that the things to, you know, the screen doesn't close on me.
If you simply type Ty Siegel Freedom's Goblin and press play, you will be able to play one YouTube video of the entire hour or so album.
What if I type dumb bullshit? What happens then?
I have a feeling you will get a video you are not interested in.
I get Tom Hardy.
if only dumb bullshit gave you Tom Hardy. No, I think actually, I will say this about this Ty Siegel album. He is at heart a sort of punkish garage rocker, and there's a lot of this here. There's a lot of raw guitar, but also this is an album where he kind of shows you how incredibly diversely talented he is. This is a 30-year-old kid that has released something like 25 albums since, you know, 2008 or something like that. He has all these different bands. He plays all these different styles, and he really can do almost anything with a guitar. He has a really unique voice, and I think you'll at least find this album interesting.
All right. I'm looking forward to all of this.
Oh, yeah. So and then, work. You know, like we can maybe catch up on The Shy next week or something, but mostly
I'm only committing to this stuff. Maybe I'll watch something else.
Mostly this is about torturing you.
I still have to write the report of freaking Young Sheldon, so I still have to watch that too. This is just going to be the worst week.
Man, yeah, maybe you should give yourself a break and put the Young Sheldon off another week.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been stalling for a while. I think people are going to start getting antsy.
All right. Well, yeah, go with God, I suppose.
All right. Well, I think that pretty much wraps this thing up. If I'm still here next week, we'll do it again.
I'll be here regardless. I'll just be crowing over Derek's dead body if this goes the way it easily could.
If I like disappear for 6 months and I write "this is not a bit" on a piece of paper, you'll understand.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.